everyone. Welcome back to Wine, Crime, and TV Time. I'm Kaylee.
And I'm Emily.
And today we have part two of the Jodi Arias case for you guys. On Monday's episode, we were just about to get to the proceedings of January 2nd, 2013. And this is the date that the trial begins, which is almost 5 years after the death of Travis Alexander and the arrest of Jodi Arias. So last week we kind of took everybody through the everything leading up to the trial, right? Like all the evidence, everything that was found. And this week we're going to kind of get into the trial because a lot more comes out with this. So yeah, in order to get in as much information as I can, I'm going to kind of go back and forth between the prosecution and the defense, like kind of the same way that a trial would. So if it seems like I'm not sticking to one certain point, I kind of want to be able to talk about the cross-examination of people is the reason I want to do that.
That makes sense.
So yeah, the first thing I wanted to say was the jurors were really shocked when they walked in and looked at Jodi and saw how meek and quiet she looked. Like how, because that's like the defense's job is to make the person look as innocent as possible.
Right.
And I feel like he definitely did that.
Right.
Like he definitely made her look very innocent, but they were very shocked, by that. And in my opinion, we're going to get there, but, they should have kept it at just looking at her and not hearing her talk. But whatever. So the prosecution opens up and they start by stating Jodi's motive in all of this. They bring up how on May 28th, 2008, Jodi sends an email to Travis about him going to Cancun and taking Mimi instead of her and how furious she was about it. And the prosecutor talks about the escalation of that and how Travis was stabbed 27 times starting in the shower and that being where the camera fell. And started to accidentally take photos from that day, eventually leading her to shoot him.
Do you think that the camera accidentally started taking photos or she being sick and twisted took the photos?
I think it accidentally took, I think it took the photos on accident.
Okay. I felt
just like because of the way the angle was on everything. It was so weird.
I definitely also like feel like she wasn't a good photographer from the beginning.
Oh, well, yeah. Which like, that was her like thing.
Passion. And she wasn't very good at it.
I do feel like the photo, the camera fell and was taking pictures. Just because of that weird picture with her leg and his body. It's like so weird. If she were like sick and twisted, I would think that she would be like actually taking
selfies with
it. Yeah, like real pictures. Like they looked like kind of just like scattered like accidental pictures, honestly.
Okay.
So now it's the defense's turn for their opening statement, and they start off by talking about how toxic and abusive the relationship was. He talks about how Travis pushed Jodi to have this secret sexual relationship with him when all she wanted was to love him. Her attorney claims that while they were having their photo shoot in the shower, she dropped the camera while taking his photos, and he freaked out and attacked her, causing her to fight back. And here's, like, the thing that I want to say about his opening statement is I really do believe that their relationship was extremely toxic from the moment they met, which I kind of said last week. Like, I said how the fact that they found each other, like, irresistible and, like, could not get away from each other from the moment they met, like, I find that, like, a pretty toxic trait, honestly. Like, I find that, I don't know.
And like I said, like, I had that relationship before, and it was extremely toxic.
Yeah.
So I totally get that. I mean, I don't think I would ever kill someone.
Right. But I do think that they had a toxic relationship.
Yeah.
I definitely think that.
Yeah.
I also think that she is one of the most manipulative people on the face of this earth. And I think that he was very much so obsessed with sex with her. I think that I don't think that that's that unnormal.
No.
Or uncommon.
Yeah.
I think that that's pretty normal, but I do think that he had, like, an obsession with it.
With her. Sex or with her or both?
I don't know. I kind of think both. I mean, we only know about the sex between the two of them. We don't know what his past sex life was.
I feel like he had, like, some kind of sex addiction in a way.
Like, due to him being Mormon
exactly.
And, like, having to hide it?
Yep.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely agree.
Because what the other girlfriend says that he got, like, inappropriate and she didn't want to do that with him.
She did. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the prosecution comes back and begins to call witnesses to the stand. They call Mimi Hall to the stand, and that's the woman who was supposed to go on the vacation to Cancun with Travis and the person who, like, went to his house and eventually, like, found his body. Well, she didn't find it. She was the
911 call.
But she was the 911 call, mm-hmm. yeah. And she testified that Travis was never sexually inappropriate with her and he never made her feel uncomfortable. And, in fact, she always felt extremely safe with Travis. This is the part where Mimi starts to bring up the fact that Travis did have a stalker or is asked by Juan Martinez about Travis's stalker. And Mimi says that she had slashed his tires multiple times, hacked his emails, his bank account, snuck into his house through the doggy door, slept on his couch.
She hacked his bank account? Mm-hmm. Did she take money from mm-hmm. him?
From what I understand.
I love.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, she would sleep on the couch without him knowing, and like I said before, he once found her hiding behind his Christmas tree.
Happy which holidays.
I cannot get over. Like, I just can't imagine, like, finding somebody. Can you imagine? She said she never heard Travis say the name of his stalker. However, they knew who it was.
Yeah, that's like an unspoken thing.
It is, and I think he just kept saying, like, my ex, if I had to guess, but he probably never said Jody.
Yeah, because you remember in the 911
call. They didn't even remember her name.
Exactly.
So the prosecution calls up medical examiner Kevin Horn to the stand. And he reiterates the wounds that Travis had, and they show the evidence photos to go along with what he's describing. Jody wouldn't look during this time. Like, she had her head down. She's constantly, like, dabbing her eyes. And you couldn't really see if she was actually crying because you couldn't see her face. But I also know that his family could not look at this. Like, they...
I mean, why would you want to look at your son or your family member or whatever dead?
Yeah, they had their heads down. It was really bad. The medical examiner talks about how Travis's brain was perforated, meaning he would be rapidly incapacitated once his brain was hit with that force, making it impossible for things to go the way that Jody claimed that they did. Because she claimed that she shot him first and he didn't die and then stabbed him because of the fact that he didn't die. But the fact that the gunshot perforated the brain means that that would have come last, pretty much. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? He also stated that the gunshot wound would have had to have come after the defensive wounds on his hands, which are from...
Yeah, they think that she shot him after he was already dead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The defense cross-examines Horn and pokes holes in the fact that he has no evidence that the bullet hit the brain, meaning that the timing of the stabbing versus the gunshot wound is actually unknown.
Mm.
And I don't know. I'm not a medical examiner, so I can't really speak on that, but... The prosecution now brings up the incident that occurred on May 28th, 2008, where we didn't talk about this in the beginning because this didn't come out until the trial. So on May 28th, 2008, the Yreka Police Department responds to a burglary at the home of Carolyn Allen, who claims only a few things have been stolen from her home, a DVD player, a CD player, some cash, and a 25 caliber gun. As the police are there, Jody Arias pulls up in the driveway, who is Carolyn's granddaughter that lives with them. They never found these items and never found who burglarized Jody's grandparents' home. They call the detective who investigated this incident in Yreka up to the stand, and he testifies that the gun that went missing is the exact same caliber as the casing that they found in the home of Travis Alexander that he was shot with.
No way.
Mm-hmm.
What are the odds of that?
I know. Crazy. This gun has never been found. Now, mind you, this is only 3 days after the email that she sent to Travis about how pissed she was that he wasn't bringing her to Mexico.
She was planning this.
Like, for a while.
She was fucking planning this. Which is so weird to me.
Super weird.
Like, I get it. Okay, you're mad. Fine. Whatever. You're also not together with him. That doesn't necessarily give you a right to be mad, but sure, you're a human. You have feelings. Does that mean you have to kill him?
Right, she's clearly crazy.
Like, also,
this,
like,
was literally a case, and I don't want to, like, talk too much on this before, like, we get, like, everything out, but, like, this is literally a case of, like, if I can't have him, no one can. That's literally what this comes down to.
Which is so strange.
So strange, but you can't rationalize irrational people.
Yeah.
So, the defense now calls up one of their witnesses, Jody's ex-boyfriend, Daryl Brewer, who was Jody's much older boyfriend that she was living with at the time she met Travis.
Mm.
The two had dated from 2002 to 2006.
Oh, wow.
They dated a long time.
Quite a long time.
Yeah, for 4 years. and he was 20 years older than her. He described Jody as, and I find this weird, the first word that came out of his mouth was irresponsible. I was like, what a weird...
Shocker, though.
You know? He described Jody as irresponsible, caring, loving, and had a great relationship with his son, which he really loved about her. They even remained good friends after they broke up. And I think what this did for her was it kind of humanized her a bit and was a way to try to make you think, like, oh, this woman is, like, good with children. Like, she couldn't have ever done something so, like, terrible. Like, it was just a way to make her look better.
All right. You know? But that still doesn't mean, like, mothers killed people all the time and they have, you know what I mean? Like,
sure. But at this point, all the defense can do is hope that they can get off on a reasonable doubt. You right. know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the prosecution cross-examined Daryl and asks him about a conversation he and Jody had in May of 2008, where she asked him to borrow 2 gas cans. And if he saw her at all during the trip that she made to Southern California, from Northern California, then up to Utah. He says he saw her on June 3rd when she came to his home, and the information is a little convoluted here just because I can't tell if he testifies that he gave these gas cans on that date or if he pleads the fifth. I honestly think he pleads the fifth. So it's right. unknown when those gas cans were given to her. However, along this trip, she did visit him, and she also had the 2 gas cans.
Yeah, and she only wanted the gas cans to, like, so she didn't get caught on camera at gas stations.
Right, this
so...
would mean that she wouldn't have to stop in Arizona to get gas.
Yeah.
So the prosecution is, again, just saying how planned out and methodical this really was. Like, the fact that she, like, went down there, got mm-hmm. these gas cans, like...
It wasn't, like, killing him in self-defense like she said she was. Mm-hmm. Like, she planned this.
Right. So the prosecution brings up Detective Flores to testify, and that's the detective that was the head of this case before it went to trial.
Okay.
The prosecution brings up Detective Flores to testify. He's asked about Jody's receipts. In Jody's home that she lived with her grandparents, Detective Flores had found a shoebox of her receipts that she had kept from her trip through California and Utah. And in her receipts, there was one for Walmart where she purchased another 5-gallon gas tank that she had actually returned that same day. She had also told detectives that she was nowhere near Mesa, Arizona on those days and had receipts to prove it, kind of insinuating that she logically planned what receipts to keep to track her alibi because she had known she was going to kill him. Right. Like, that's kind of what they were implying, because in all these receipts, there's nothing in Arizona, but she kept all these receipts from
everywhere else
and returned this gas can and whatever. This was a huge bombshell dropped, because up until now, the public really didn't know about this. Like, they didn't know about the receipts. They didn't know anything about that. But there was more that nobody knew until this moment. Jody had rented a car on June 2nd, right when her trip was about to begin, from Budget Rental Cars in Redding, California, which was 99 miles from Yreka, which I think is a little strange because, like, A, why are you renting this car for this trip? And B, why are you renting it so far from, like, your home in such a random spot? The agency testified that when the car came back to them, the floor mats were missing and that there were Kool-Aid-like stains that were cleaned before police could test for anything.
Yeah, blood.
Right. As they clean each car when it comes back, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Another small piece of information here is that Jody told Detective Flores to test my car for evidence. Aww. She almost, like, taunts law enforcement, mm-hmm. like, constantly, mm-hmm. when she thinks that she's smarter than them and mm-hmm. that she can get away with something, because she knew that nothing was going to be found in her
car. Right,
because
she rented a fucking car.
Yes. So the company first offered her a red car, which she turned down because she wanted something more subtle and the red was too flashy. So she got a white car. But I find that interesting that she didn't want to be, like, noticed.
Which makes sense.
They also stated that when she came in to pick up the car, she was platinum blonde. And when she dropped the car off, they couldn't get a great look at her face because she had sunglasses on, but her hair was now dark brown. So I remember you, like, questioning that in the last mm-hmm. episode that we were talking about, because mm-hmm. you were, like, unsure when that
yeah.
was that she died. Died? That she dyed her hair.
Yeah.
But I found that interesting that the rental yeah, car company said yeah. that. The prosecution points out that Travis's driveway was in plain view for the neighbors to see, and that they all had known what Jody's car looked like since she had been there so many times. She was kind of, like, living there for a period of time, whatever. And they claim that this is the reason that she got the rental car in order to hide from the neighbors or his roommates knowing that she was there.
Right.
The rear license plate of the car was turned upside down when she had gotten pulled over for that on June 5th in Utah with Ryan Burns. He was in the car with her when she got pulled over for this. And there's a few theories on this. Some people think that she took the license plate off at Travis's so no one would see the license plate and report it when Travis was found dead. And then in a rush to leave, she accidentally put it on upside down because it was dark. There's also a theory that she purposely put it upside down in an, almost like a way to make sure she got pulled over on her way to, like, record where she was. But an officer didn't notice it until she was in Salt Lake City.
Right.
I tend to lean more with the first one.
Yeah, I feel like I do too.
Right? Like, but both are interesting. Like, yeah. I feel like it could go either way. Mm-hmm. But I tend to lean more with the first one, just knowing how, like, intelligent and manipulative Jody is. And I think that it was, like, a total accident that she put it upside down. I could totally see her doing that. But what's weird about that, too, is she made a statement saying that, like, she stopped at a Starbucks and, like, saw these kids all, like, hanging around her, like, around the car. And she's convinced that they turned the license plate upside down to mess with her.
Imagine, like, doing that for fun.
Like, it's just so weird.
Let's turn this upside down, bro.
And, like, wouldn't that take some time? Let's mess with this
lady. Yeah.
Like, you're just at Starbucks.
Yeah. Unless she was having a full-on breakfast there.
Right.
Like, strange.
And from what I understand, the prosecution actually kind of, like, debunked that just because of the way that the Starbucks parking lot was set up. Like, it wouldn't have been possible for her to, like, park where she said she parked or whatever and not, and like, not see these kids or them to, like, run away and not, like, it was weird. Like, there was no, it didn't make sense.
Right.
However, I also believe that the prosecution also sides with the first theory in that of her taking the license plate off when she was at Travis's house.
Okay.
And then putting it back.
I hope so.
So I also want to talk a little bit again about something from the last episode and how Jody and Travis had multiple conversations on June 2nd, the early morning before she began her trip. And I'm just so curious about what this conversation was, because we'll literally never know. But just for everyone's memory, on June 2nd, between 1 a.m. and 3 a.m., Jody tried calling Travis four times, but there was no answer each time. And the longest call was 17 seconds. At around 3 a.m., Travis called Jody back twice, once for 18 minutes and once for 41 minutes. And at 4:03, Jody called Travis back again, and the call lasted about 3 minutes, and that's where the conversation ends. And I'm just so curious about what could have happened here. Like, was this the breaking point for her that made her, like, truly snap to do this? Was she already planning it? Were these, like, angry words? Were these happy words? Like, why were they talking at 3 a.m.? I just, like, I need to know what happened there. It's just so weird to me.
And nothing good ever happens after past, like, 2 a.m.
But also, I do feel like she was planning this before, just because of, like, stealing the gun and stuff like that. Like, you know?
Yeah, she's fucked up.
So now the defense calls Lisa Andrews to the stand, who was Travis's ex-girlfriend as a teenager. And, like, they were kind of on and off for a few years. And she claimed that he had been sexually aggressive and had emailed him about his, like, bad behavior. And I couldn't find the exact email, but I found, like, parts of it, what she said. And I just found, like, an article on it, so I'm kind of going to read a little bit of that. But it says, in the email, Daydone told Alexander she did not want to text him, did not want him to text or email her anymore. It says when they were together, they would make out for too long, and that Daydone felt Alexander just wanted her for her body. She felt Alexander had a lot of sexual tension, which made her feel used and dirty. She also wrote in the email that she had asked him not to grab her butt, especially in public, but she did not feel he was really listening to her. She said she also asked him not to talk about sex so much, but he did anyway, and she did not feel like he cared about her. Alexander, according to Daydone's email, asked for compliments often and did not share the same values that she embraced. She also said he overreacted a lot. Dadone testified that she later discussed the email with Alexander, who said he wanted to show Dadone that he cared about her and to address the issues in that email. So, I mean, seeing her on the stand, you can kind of tell that she has, like, literally no interest in being there and almost seems, like, irritated and annoyed. I don't know if you picked up on that, but yeah. I was like, wow, she does not want to be there.
She was like, whatever.
She eventually found out that Travis was cheating on her with Jody, and she broke it off. I believe they had been, like, on and off for years because there's no way she was a teenager when Travis was 30. So the prosecution cross-examines her and asks her if she was sexually inexperienced and just frustrated at the time of this email. She agrees that she was inexperienced and frustrated with Travis. And she kind of says, like, yeah, I mean, I was at the time. Like, maybe I overreacted. I don't know.
Probably. It kind of sounds like it.
It does seem like it. So now we're going to jump into Jody's testimony, which she actually took the stand in her case, which many defendants do not do in a murder case. Honestly, in most, like, trials, defendants don't. However, her lawyer did not seem to think it was a bad idea to do.
Was her lawyer a public defender?
He wasn't, I don't think. He was very, like, timid and quiet, though. Like, he was...
Like she was.
But actually.
Yeah.
So the defense calls Jody to the stand, and her testimony winds up lasting 18 days, which I think is a really long time to be, like,
that is a really long time.
She claims that she killed Travis in self-defense after years of degradation.
They weren't together for years.
Right. Like, it was a year, maybe.
If that.
Right?
Oh, gosh.
On February 4th, her testimony begins. She claims that right after her Mormon baptism, they had anal sex. She accuses him of raping her, claiming that there were many times that she just went along with what he wanted to appease him. They start to read text messages between the two, which are definitely intense. And both of them went back and forth having phone sex and explicit texts. Like, I honestly, like, don't even want to read these texts because they make me so uncomfortable.
You found them?
Yeah, there's so many. Like, I didn't find every single one. Oh, but I didn't, like, find them. I'll kind of talk about what they're about, but they're so, like, this part gets, like, really gross and weird. So, just forewarning.
Brace yourself.
She claims that she once walked in on him masturbating to child pornography, and she believed that he was a pedophile.
Yeah, bullshit.
She claims that he would watch both male and female child pornography, which is very strange, actually, because typically child predators either target boys or girls, not both. Like, they, you know what I mean? They have a preference. So she also describes four times of him being physically abusive to her. She claims he slammed her on the floor and kicked her for not having $200 to lend him.
He had money.
Exactly. Like, I find that so weird because he was so successful and, like, made so much money. Like, why would he need her $200? But she also claims that this is the reason that she has a crooked finger. He, like, broke her finger after slamming her to the ground.
I'm sure she slammed herself to the ground.
She shows it up for, she holds it up to show everyone to see this broken finger, how it's, like, different.
Well, she had it from, like, birth or something like that.
Well, just you wait. So, she claims that this happened in January of 2008. And I want you to keep this in mind because we're going to come back to this when the prosecution cross-examines her. So from here on out, they basically just assassinate Travis's character and play more phone calls between the two that were recorded and read text messages. He says to her, I'm going to tie you to a tree and put it up your butt. She responds, and I don't know that it's exactly that or if I, like, made that more PG-13.
All right.
And she says, she responds to him that it's debasing and she likes it.
Oh, God.
He tells her to start touching herself, and she says that she already is, and this is where things get really weird. They both start moaning, especially her, and I guess she, like, orgasms. And he says it sounds like a 12-year-old girl who just had her first orgasm. It's so hot. Which is so creepy and weird.
So maybe she wasn't lying.
Right. However, and maybe she wasn't, and, like, I do think that he had some sort of weird sex thing, but, like, I think a lot of people do, and, like, that is, like, very strange, but it's also being taken out of context.
True.
Also, this phone with these recordings and texts was allegedly lost for years and found right before the trial and handed over to the defense. So, like, why did she have these conversations recorded?
Oh, she had them recorded.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit, okay.
She had them recorded on her phone. And why is it that, I mean, this all happened in 2008, right? And we're at trial in, what, 2013?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I just find that a little bit, like, strange. And, like, creepy that she recorded it.
Oh, yeah, so weird.
So now they get to Jody's account of everything. She claims that she was taking pictures of Travis in the shower. The camera slipped and fell onto the ground. And being a new camera, he went into a rage and yelled at her, "A 5-year-old could hold a camera better than you." Which, like, what a weird thing to, like, fly into a rage over and yell at somebody.
Yeah. I mean, was it her camera or his?
There is, like, nobody knows.
Okay. Because, I mean, like, if it was his, I understand you're dropping a brand new camera. But if it was hers, which I feel like it was probably hers because she was the photographer, then who the fuck cares?
Right. And, like, but also who yells, like, a 5-year-old can hold a camera better than you and then, like, all of a sudden attacks you?
Yeah.
So she says he lunges at her and body slams her and they struggle. She says that she got away from him and ran into his closet to hide when she realized he had his gun in there. So she points the gun at him and he lunged at her and the gun went off. She didn't know if she shot him or not, but knows he told her to kill him.
Kill me!
Right. She couldn't really remember details of the murder, which, how convenient.
Mm-hmm.
But she thinks that she blacked out and doesn't remember stabbing Travis or dragging his body anywhere. So when the prosecutor gets up to cross-examine her, it was definitely intense. Juan Martinez basically is yelling at her. There were even times where he got on my nerves, to be honest. Like, I was like, okay, like, simmer down enough. But I get that he's, like, doing his job.
Mm-hmm.
I will say Jody was, like, very ready for him and challenged everything he came at her with. Like I said before, Jody's just so manipulative and really has the ability to, like, control a room in a conversation. And at one point he brings up Jody's memory problem. And I want to play a little bit of what is said at court then, just so you can hear how she talks to people and how it's like, you can easily think that this woman is innocent, honestly, just by the way that she, like, can manipulate people mm-hmm. and talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
And based on the way that they talk to her.
I know the range, but not the exact hours.
So you're telling me you don't know the exact hours?
Yes.
Right? And anything else that you would give me would be a guess, right?
Yes.
And, ma'am, do you have, I mean, you had a lot of memory for a lot of events involving sexual instances with Mr. Alexander, yet you seem to be having problems with your memory here today. And you also alluded to a little bit that you have problems with your memory. Is this a long-standing thing that you've had problems with your memory, or is this just something that happened recently?
Sustained.
Your problems with your memory, is it of recent vintage?
Define recent.
I don't know, since you started testifying.
No, it goes back further than that.
How long does it, far back does it go?
I don't even know if I'd call it a problem.
Well, just tell me how far back it goes. You said you were going to tell me, so tell me, please.
How far back what goes?
We're talking about your memory problem, right?
I don't know that I'd really call it a problem.
Okay.
I don't remember every single thing that's ever happened to me in my whole life.
Ma'am, your memory issues. We're talking about those, right?
I wouldn't even call them issues, but okay, my memory.
Well, you don't want to call them problems, right?
No, I don't want to.
You don't want to call them issues, right?
I don't know. I really
don't. You don't want to call them issues. You just told me that, right?
I didn't say I don't want to.
All right. So can we call them issues then?
Okay.
With regard to these memory issues that you claim to have, when did you start having them?
Depends on the type of memory issue.
If it benefits you, you have a memory issue?
Objection, argumentative, Your Honor.
or if it hurts you, you have a memory.
Objection, Your Honor.
Faint.
Well?
When it hurts, sometimes I...
Ma'am, there's no question right now. You say that you have memory problems, but it depends on the circumstance, right?
That's right.
And give me the factors. I don't want to know about a specific circumstance. What factors influence your having a memory problem?
Usually when men like you are screaming at me or grilling me, or someone like Travis doing the same.
So that affects your memory problems,
it
right?
It does. It makes my brain scramble.
So you're saying that it's the core, basically what you're saying is Mr. Martinez's fault that you can't remember things that are going on.
It's not your fault.
I'm not saying that. You're saying that, isn't it?
No, I'm not saying that.
Is there something about a certain decibel of the voice that creates problems?
Decibel, tone, content, sort of a combination of those factors.
So, I kind of want to talk about that a little bit, but I just want to say at the end of that, like, right before they say to approach, you see her, like, laugh. Like, she has this, like, smirk where she, like, laughs about the whole thing. It's just so weird. I don't know. I will say I do find him, like, annoying.
I feel like she handled it so well.
I know. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
And she looks at the jury when she's talking.
But she's also, like such a smartass. Mm-hmm. And, like, I kind of like that about her.
Right. Like, that's what I mean. Like, she knew.
Yeah. No, she definitely.
What she was doing. And she was, like, prepared.
Yeah. She was good.
So he then challenges her broken finger by showing Jody a photo of her and a friend 3 months after the alleged incident happened with him body slamming her in the finger thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in this picture, her finger is not bent or broken. And he claims that the injury, in fact, happened on June 4th, 2008, when she was killing Travis. He also goes at her really hard, confronting the stabbing, and shows pictures of Travis and what he had done, or and what she had done. And Jody just, like, breaks down and claims over and over again that she doesn't remember. Like, every single question he asks, she's like, I don't remember. And he's like, were you crying when you stabbed him? Mm-hmm. She's like, I don't remember. And she's like crying and mm-hmm. whatever. And yeah, I honestly feel like, I mean, it wound up being fine, but I personally feel that he never should have been as, like, aggressive with that, because it just made her look, like, sad about it. And, like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, he was intense.
He was really intense. But again, you can't really tell if she's truly crying because her head is down.
Mm-hmm.
So they both give their closing arguments, and it's time for the jury to deliberate. It takes them 4 days to come up with a verdict, and the verdict was guilty of first-degree murder. Minutes after this verdict is read, Jody gives an immediate interview, that was really unexpected, and of course, she's trying to fix up her makeup first. And she asks for the death penalty. She claims that she believes it would be ultimate freedom, and
this interview
was
so weird to me.
It's so weird.
A couple of minutes ago, you heard the verdict from the jury. What are your thoughts?
I think I just went blank. Just I don't know. I just feel overwhelmed. I think I just need to take it a day at a time.
Was it unexpected, you think, this verdict?
It was unexpected for me, yes, because there was no premeditation on my part. I can see how things look that way, but I didn't expect the premeditation. I could see maybe the felony murder because of how the law is written, but I didn't the whole time I was fairly confident I wouldn't get premeditation because there was no premeditation.
Sure. It seemed like some of those jurors didn't believe what you were telling them, didn't believe your story. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that?
I can understand that, I think, because of what I was, the lies that I told in the beginning to try to cover up this, cover up that, hide things that I didn't want to be known, made public. I don't know that I have a direct message for the jury. I know that I prayed constantly for every single one of them, so that's the jury that was brought to me. That's the the jury that I was meant to have.
So you pray for the jury?
I prayed prior to trial that the right jurors would be on my jury. So I just have to believe that those were the right jurors.
Are you focusing on the court, or are you focusing on what could be the worst outcome for you?
Well, the worst outcome for me would be natural life. I would much rather die sooner than later. Longevity runs in my family, and I don't want to spend the rest of my natural life in one place. You know, I'm pretty healthy. I don't smoke, and I would probably live a long time. So that's not something I'm looking forward to. I said years ago that I'd rather get death than life, and that still is true today. I believe death is the ultimate freedom, so I'd rather just have my freedom as soon as I can get it.
So you're saying you actually...
She wants to die. Doesn't she understand she's going to hell?
Right.
Like, you're not going to heaven at this point.
She's just something else to me. And I can't remember if this is the interview where she... like, talks to him and says, like, I didn't realize that you were a hater before you interviewed me.
I don't think it's that one.
I don't think it is either, but I couldn't remember. So 4 weeks later is the sentencing hearing, and Travis's family gets a chance to speak, and his sister Samantha gave, like, a really emotional speech. And she kind of talks about, like, how Travis was their, like, the glue that held them all together, and, like, she's crying. And, like, there literally was not a dry eye, I'm pretty sure, in that, room, because the speech she gave was like, it was just so sad, and she just like talks about how like Jody took that away from them and stuff like that, but like she wasn't bitter or nasty to Jody, she just like asked them to like really consider the harshness of the crime and what was taken from them. So Jody is also given the opportunity to speak to the jury once more before her sentencing, and I live for this part. She stands before the jury and talks about all the lies that she told, but she spoke on how she was telling the truth now. She holds up a t-shirt that she claims she has made in jail and to do good in the world, because it's a t-shirt with the word survivor on it. And she claims 100% of the proceeds will go to support victims of domestic abuse. What the fuck?
No, when you're on Survivor, all I remember I'm a survivor, but I'm like, gonna make it.
You have the audacity to write survivor on a shirt after you killed, like, you're on a, like,
and they didn't, you just got convicted survive. Of murder. Yeah,
I can't even believe it.
It's just another thing that she's trying to make up.
I know, So she also never apologizes or accepts any responsibility or remorse for what she's done to Travis. She doesn't say anything to his parents his parents weren't there, or his family. And she actually now begs for life in prison and does not want the death penalty, as she wasn't thinking about what that meant 4 weeks prior.
She doesn't understand what the death penalty means.
She says, "Don't do this for me, but for my family's sake." So 3 days later, the jury came back and they were deadlocked. 8 jurors wanted death and 4 jurors wanted life in prison. And they claimed that no amount of time could change this decision. So it was declared a mistrial. So a year and a half later, they go through the exact same trial again. Just the sentencing trial, not the whole entire thing. But they go through another sentencing trial on February 25th, 2015. And it's a new jury, and the new jury is deadlocked. 11 for death and 1 for life in prison.
Should be majority rules.
So, once again, this is dismissed as a mistrial. And the prosecution only gets 2 shots at the death sentence. And since both were concluded as a mistrial, the judge had to hand down Jody's sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So, on April 13th, 2015, Jody Ann Arias was sentenced to life in prison with no possibility of parole. Which... I feel like is right where she belongs to be.
I would be happy with the death penalty.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
See, I have, like, my opinions on the death penalty. I don't know that I could convict somebody of the death penalty. I do believe that she belongs to have life in prison and not the death penalty.
Now, did you watch the interview with her cellmate?
I didn't, but I was, like, kind of reading about it, about how, like, her cellmate said that she's a sociopath.
Mm-hmm. I think her cellmate was in love with her, though.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, it seemed like there was some kind of relationship going on there.
Mm.
And she has her name tattooed on her. And now that she's out and she's on TV, she's like, it was, like, the biggest mistake of my life. Like, no, it wasn't. You were boning her. Like, relax.
Well, right.
You were scissoring her.
Well, and I remember, like, seeing this, like, years later, I remember seeing, like, Jody in prison singing Amazing Grace or something like that. I'm just like, I can't. But I want to play an interview with you, or an interview for you, which I believe was right after the sentencing.
Why didn't you apologize to them?
I did apologize to them.
You never said I'm sorry.
I said that I'm sorry, that I'll never be able to make up for what I did, and that I can never replace their loss.
But you didn't use the word I'm sorry.
Well, then I'm sorry I didn't say that, because certainly I am sorry. I think, in a sense, the words I'm sorry just seem meaningless, especially since nobody believes what I'm saying anyway.
You said it right there. No one believes a word out of your mouth. Why do you keep talking?
Well, because I know that I'm not just, I've lied before. That doesn't mean that I'm a liar by definition, by character.
What do you think of this jury? It's pretty clear they don't think too much of you. I wonder what you think of them.
I don't know. I feel a little betrayed by them. I don't dislike them. I just was really hoping that they would see things for what they are, and I don't feel that they did.
To a lot of people, they think this switch from I want to die to now I want to live is just another lie from Jody Arias.
Well, I don't know what that means. Was I lying when I said I want to die, or was I lying when I say please spare my life, you know? Whatever happens, I'm just going to take it and deal with it.
You said today you want to give Travis's family closure. You know they want you dead. So why don't you give them that closure?
Well, what do you mean by that? Why don't I kill myself? Is that what you're asking?
No, why don't you accept the fate of the death penalty if you know that's what they want? If you truly care about their closure?
Well, I've caused them a lot of pain. I've caused my family a lot of pain. And I think that by asking for death, I'm only going to cause more pain to my family.
If you were on that jury and you had heard what they have heard, would you kill you?
I don't believe in capital punishment, so the answer would be no.
So you really are never going to tell the truth about what went down in that bathroom?
I don't know what you mean by that, because I've told the truth.
Okay.
I didn't know that you were a hater when you came to interview me.
A lot has been made about your appearance and your change in appearance. Was going from blonde bombshell to sort of a mousy church librarian look in court, was that a defense strategy? Was that your idea? What was that?
No, they don't sell Clairol hair dye in jail. So this is my natural hair color.
But there was more than just the hair color. The glasses, overall, the demeanor is very different than the person that you were before this crime happened. What about that?
Well, this is a court of law. It's not a place to go and act crazy, or I shouldn't use that term, but it's not a place to go and just let loose. It's a court of law.
I just, like, she is so smug. I find it funny how, like, confrontational he was with her. Like, mm-hmm. He was, like, definitely, like, pressing questions.
He was good.
Also, I wanted to point out that was actually after the 2013 hearing, where the first deadlock was. Mm-hmm. That wasn't after anything. I don't exactly know that there is an interview after everything. I don't think that there is.
I think maybe
her lawyer was like, relax with the interviews. And by then, everybody was over it. Like, we all knew she was getting something, whether it was life in prison or death. Like, Everybody was like, okay, whatever. She's where she belongs.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think that I have covered pretty much everything that there is on that trial.
I have to agree.
I don't know. Is there anything I missed?
I don't think so. The only thing that I can think of is, like, comparisons to the Lifetime movie, but I can't... That obviously is not all accurate, so I can't even bring that up.
Which it is a great movie.
Great movie.
But
I feel like it's pretty spot on.
Yeah.
It's pretty spot on. But I just know in the movie he had an actual girlfriend.
Interesting.
After Jody, and she, like, snuck into the house and was taking pictures of them, like, sleeping on the couch together or whatever.
Yeah.
But he didn't in reality have a girlfriend after Jody.
No, he like wanted to be with that Mimi girl, but she wasn't, didn't want to be with him. So this is definitely a crazy one. This is one that like I think about often, and anytime I see a new documentary or anything come out on this, I'm like, oh, I need to watch it, because I'm like, there must be more information, but I'm like, okay, we have like literally every piece of information there could be. So yeah. I mean, she clearly did this. There's no saying that there was self-defense or anything like that.
You think she did it?
But like,
she's so innocent.
There are people out there who really think that she didn't do this.
Well, they're also psychos and they need to get their brain checked.
Just saying, I mean.
Yeah.
I would love to see the evidence that she didn't do it, because everything I found, I was like, okay,
all signs
point
to yes.
And I remember like a long time ago when I was watching like Dateline with my dad, I remember him telling me that most of the time the simplest answer is the right answer. And like, I just feel like this is the right answer.
I agree.
There's no, like, two showers in the picture. There's no, like, come on.
Yeah.
The whole trip. The trip right there sold me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. She did it because of that.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, like, her trip from Northern California to Southern California to Arizona to Utah. Like, the receipts, the rental car. Why are you renting a car for this? Why did you take the license, like, why did you turn the license plate
around?
Why did you keep certain receipts? Why did you buy this gas can? Why did you return
the gas
can?
She thought she was going to get away with it.
She 100% did. And she thought she was going to get away with it until the day she was sentenced.
Mm-hmm. And then she was like, oh, shit. Okay.
And she just, like, keeps her composure. She's something else, man. That woman. She's master manipulator.
Crazy. Yeah.
Happy I wasn't in her life. But.
Same.
So, yeah, I think that's it for today's episode. Thank you guys for tuning into our bonus episode this week. It's a little extra, extra.
Extra, extra. Do you remember watching that? Yes. I wonder if that's still on.
It is. My mom watches it. We will be back on Friday with another, I guess, teen mom episode. And then we'll be back on Monday with another true crime episode. I don't know what one that's going to be. We haven't decided yet.
Mm-mm.
Oh, happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Tomorrow is Thanksgiving.
Tomorrow is Thanksgiving.
How fun. Mm-hmm.
But it's also like a week away for us now.
Right. But like tomorrow is Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I hope everybody has the best Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoys their turkey.
I hope you're not ketos.
Enjoy your mashed potatoes, your stuffing. I know I will be definitely cheating on keto. So yeah, leave us some comments. I don't know where you can rate us or anything like that on Spotify, to be honest, but I know you can on Apple Podcasts.
Mm-hmm. But do that, please.
Yes, it definitely helps us out.
Mm-hmm.
And go follow our Instagram, our Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll be back on Friday.
Bye.